This is AENN, American Exceptionalism News Network.
Protestations of Obama himself in his speech to children in Northern Ireland about peace, when he said, "Those who choose a path of peace, I promise you that the United States of America will support you every step of the way. We will be the wind at your back." Now I ask you, is this person going for the Hypocrite of the Century Award? Because we have to call things by their right names. And the reality is that by any serious examination, this man is a war criminal.
2-1-1-0.
I know some people want me to bypass Congress and change the laws on my own.
It is the agenda for the 21st century you're living in today. For a brave new world where everything that you cherished and held true will no longer exist.
In the original Constitution, I think it is an imperfect document, and I think it is a document that reflects some deep flaws.
And that would authorize him to use the military to arrest people in the United States who, in the president's opinion, are enemies of the country.
You'll find that they've also asked for the right to imprison farmers who wouldn't keep books as prescribed by the federal government. The Secretary of Agriculture asked for the right to seize farms through condemnation and resell them to other individuals. And contained in that same program was a provision that would have allowed the federal government to remove 2 million farmers from the soil.
New government Republicans and Democrats were busy shredding the last vestiges of the Constitution. They're talking about inserting the army into domestic law enforcement. The homeland is part of the battlefield, and people can be held without trial, whether an American citizen or not.
I have been often to, the mothership in New York City, but it's good to have an outpost of the council right here down the street from the State Department. We get a lot of advice from the council, so this will mean I won't have as far to go to be told what we should be doing and how we should think about the future.
Take off the tinfoil hat
and put on the Kevlar.
It's time for battle with Paul Preston and the Agenda 21 Show.
Well, hello and welcome to Agenda 21 Radio. This is the radio show that is stopping totalitarianism one exceptional American at a time. And yes, ladies and gentlemen, are you that exceptional American? I suspect you are. That's why you're here on this radio show, listening to it intensely. Especially, it seems like we have more and more listeners every day, and we're hearing from you. And we really do appreciate your feedback. We really do appreciate the many, many, many fine citizen journalists who contribute to and have contributed over the years to Agenda 21 Radio. We get some incredible tips, and oftentimes they lead the nation. Sometimes you hear some of the same comments I pass along from my citizen journalists coming right out of the lips of, say, the president. Amazing how radio works. Anyway, we've got a lot of things to cover here on Agenda 21 Radio. As usual, I want to remind you to go to the newcaliforniastate.com website, newcaliforniastate.com. Completed our 6th Constitutional Convention. Do you believe that? And of course, Mike Huckabee was the featured speaker along with Chris Ann Hall. Just absolutely banged it out of the park in San Luis Obispo. By the way, the people down there, Cindy Muir and Deborah Cloud, her husband Ray, absolutely did a fantastic job. So many other people that were involved down there in the coastal area of San Luis Obispo. We really do appreciate all the great work that you guys put in. It was a fantastic time. We're still getting a lot of plaudits from it. We have not completed the process, though, it doesn't look like. So it looks like we're going to probably be putting together the 7th Constitutional Convention. We weren't planning for a 7th, but we have some unfinished business that we have to do before we get into the big one, which is, of course, the Constitutional Convention, which will be led by delegates that will create the final document for the Constitution of New California as we go into Congress. And we do anticipate next year to be starting that process, which will probably be a 2-year to 3-year process of finally completing the statehood procedure that we've already put into place. And I really want to thank everybody for all the great work and dedication that you've shown to the New California State movement. It's actually working. We are moving ahead. We are in process. We're following the Constitution. We're doing everything that we legally need to do. So we will be the 51st. Well, you know, we think we are. We declared independence on January 18th, 2018. And look what that's gotten us. 95 grievances over 96 weeks and all the notoriety and so on. So anyway, thanks for listening. I'd like to give a big shout out to my very, very good friend, Patrick Wood, author of Technocracy Rising. And Patrick has we've been associated probably 10-some years now. He's been a featured speaker at numerous Liberty Tours that we used to sponsor, talking about trilaterals over Washington, Agenda 21 issues, which is, of course, at the core of that is this notion of technocracy. And he's the man who knows everything about technocracy. In the last hour, we're playing one of his speeches that he had prepared and made at in December, and spoke very, very well about the whole technocracy process. I wanted to make sure we don't get this lost at this moment, because Nancy Pelosi has come back from California. She's trotted herself down to the House, and now they're negotiating part of what she wants to put into, which is all based, by the way, on data-driven information, what she wants to do to alter this $2 trillion coronavirus bill. And so I said, geez, that data business, I got to get with Patrick, because he knows all about data-driven processes. So with us now is Patrick Wood from Arizona, and I guess it's must be beautiful weather there in Arizona, Patrick.
It is beautiful here today. We'll have about 72 degrees, sunshine, and except, you know, it looks so nice outside until you see a newspaper headline,
yeah,
or you see what going down the street frowning or coughing, whatever.
Right. So, yeah. You know, Patrick, I think, you know, it's a new generation of people that might not be understanding what is really going on here. There's a real clash. That's what this whole stock market crash is all about. That's what this, and let's just cut to the mustard, this whole coronavirus business and all that. This is really the clash, the real war that's going on between free market capitalism and the technocrats, isn't it?
Well, it is. And you know, we talked about this before, that the sworn mission of the United Nations is to overthrow capitalism and free enterprise. They've been saying this for years, and I've quoted them chapter and verse on where they say this, that they're going to replace capitalism altogether. But this vision didn't just start with the United Nations. This has been in place since the 1930s, when a group of people back then thought, well, what we need to do, we need to, you know, capitalism is dying and dying, and we need to get rid of it. And we need to do this other thing called technocracy, which is an otherworldly economic system. We kind of know it today as the Green New Deal. If there was something, a name I'd throw
right,
out, I'd
right.
throw out the Green New Deal. That's the closest thing you're going to get to technocracy right now. It's a resource-based economic system. And so all of a sudden, within what, a month now, Paul, you've seen the entire world, not just the Western world, you've seen the entire world melt down.
Right.
Economic. Forget the coronavirus. The economic meltdown is stunning. It's
right.
staggering. It's worse than the Great Depression at this point. And a few people have really noticed the statistics and stuff, but this is my background. I noticed these things. And you've got the stock markets melting down. You've had, at least in my estimation, probably at least $30 to $35 trillion of wealth evaporated from the global economic system. That's
right.
huge. H-U-G-E. and now you've got people locked down all over the country. Economic activity is just absolutely in the toilet. Even some industry experts are saying that gross domestic product is going to take like a 30% dive this year. It's like the Depression wasn't that bad.
No, it wasn't.
So this is a huge thing. Then we have on top of that, the whole financial world is collapsing as well. The financial industry That means banks, insurance companies and stuff, kind of like we had in a foretaste in 2007 with Lehman Brothers going belly up all of a sudden. And then Bear Stearns was right behind it. Well, they never did anything to fix all that, unfortunately. Well, we could have said that back then, I guess, but they didn't fix it. And now we're on the right on the verge of the same thing again. I fully expect within another, let's say, month or two, that we will wake up one morning and hear the news that some major bank has to shut its doors.
Right. One of the top five.
One of the top ones. And I don't know. It's probably going to be a European bank. I kind of doubt it's going to be an American bank. But it doesn't matter.
There is a European bank that we have been watching. I'm not going to mention which one, but it's pretty obvious when you start looking. When I start talking to economists, they're all pointing the finger at them.
Exactly. I won't mention that bank either, but probably everybody knows who we're talking about. But it's going to be huge. The derivative market around the world has gotten exponentially bigger than it was in 2007. I have a feeling already that some derivative contracts have been triggered, and they're just sitting there waiting to get paid off.
Well, it would make a lot of sense that there's so many people that are trying to. So many people. Sorry about that. I'm going to blow through the commercial here and the telephone call. There's so many people that are out there that are trying to reposition themselves right now. They don't really quite understand because of I think the whole pullback by the president. The president needs to. He's rightfully doing that. Says we're going to get the economy back up and running. And, of course, because it's really obvious, it's not the virus that we're fighting here. It's the technocrats that we're fighting.
It is. And it's, I'll tell you, I get so tired of discussing with people or arguing with people about whether, you know, the communists are going to take over. Oh, it's the socialist. No, it's the Marxist. It's this, that, or the other. It's the fascist. And for some reason, people can't get it through their head that this is technocrats and technocracy are what is taking over the whole system right now.
Right.
And this is what I've said is the clear and present danger for at least 6 or 7 years now, openly and writing and everything else, all the speeches that I give, and people look at me like I'm crazy.
We have six heads.
I know, I probably am. Yeah. But you're in there with me. If I'm crazy, you're crazy too. So
We've been called crazy, crazy, crazy. Crazy for each head that we have on our shoulder.
I know. So, you know, you've got you've got people like the Jeff Bezos of the world and the Elon Musk of the world and other big pharma companies that are, you know, trying to dominate the medical industry and stuff. You look at these people, you can't call them communists for Pete's sake. They're not communists. They're technocrats.
Right.
You look at like Anthony Fauci, who right now is, been given the helm for the coronavirus control in America. This man is a technocrat.
Exactly.
He's not a Marxist. He's not a socialist. He worships science. And he thinks that science has all the answers, and look where it's gotten us now. With the fear and panic these people have brought out, they have absolutely no concern whatsoever for any other thing in America, for instance, like the economic situation. He has no understanding of that whatsoever, and he could care less. The only thing that he focuses on is just the science of his whatever he's looking at. I heard a video yesterday where Neil deGrasse was speaking on he was interviewed by some big talk show guy and on TV, and he says that he likened this whole thing to a big experiment. He says what people need to do is learn how to listen to science, and maybe they'll get the idea when this is done that they need to listen to science and trust science and what science says. And I'll tell you what, this is the mark of a technocrat.
Right.
They believe that science is some kind of a god that has all the answers and everybody else is ignorant. And therefore, you have to just trust them. to tell you what science says you should do, and then you should just go do it. And if you argue, you're called a denier. You know, yeah. You're shamed. You're like,
well, I'm going to play for you the first part of your speech, because I think this is where it comes. This is a defining moment. It is for me. I'm a science. You know, I'm a science guy. And it is for me. I used to teach science, and I used to teach about science and the scientific method and process and data and all this other stuff. And you make some couple of good points here. I'm going to play this. This is from your speech on December 1st.
I made my living from advanced computer technology for many years during the 80s, 90s, and early 2000s. And I have utmost respect for any scientist, engineer, or technologist, but I have to throw a couple of conditions on it. And this is it: that they are honest practitioners and do not falsify their craft, number one. And number two, that they are dedicated to the service of mankind and not to the control of it. If you go that far, I'm good with it.
So you're good with that? That you're dedicated, yeah. You're honest, and of course the pseudoscience, I'm going to play that in a second, is what I think you talk about next.
But I want to say trouble started.
Hang on.
As far back as 1800, or a little shortly thereafter, when a philosopher by the name of Henri de Saint-Simon, we'll call him Henry from now on.
I wanted to touch upon him in a second, but this point about data and data points in honest science is something you certainly cannot trust with just about every technocrat on the planet, can you? They don't use honest science. They don't use honest data.
Even if occasionally the data is right, and even a broken clock is right twice a day, right?
Right.
It's not a question of whether the data is actually accurate or not. It's that the interpretation of the data leads them to prescribe actions that you must take in light of whatever it is they're looking at. And their interpretation of the data may be completely cracked, but that doesn't matter. You know, however they read the tea leaves is what you must do. And this has been the way they have advanced for the last 10 years. And little by little, this pseudoscience or this crackpot, you know, futuristic interpretation of science is what has plagued our society. You've got things like predictive policing, for instance, where scientists think, whoa, we can use artificial intelligence and predict who's going to commit a crime next. Well, no, you can't. You can't predict the future. And every system that's been tried for predictive policing has failed. But does that deter these technocrats? No, it doesn't deter them. So, well, we just need more data. It's like, we just need more data. That's all. And once we get more data, we'll show you our system will work. So this thing is so full of holes, it's not even funny. But, people that want to control what other people do, this is the problem. This is the root problem. And this has been the problem of dictators forever, really, all throughout history. Somebody stands up and says, I'm going to tell you what to do, Buster, and you're going to do it. Now, how high are you going to jump? Technocrats fall into that same kind of mold.
Right. And, you know, I listened to this one. This is I want to play this clip and see if we can I'll get the right statement from Nancy Pelosi. I think it's kind of interesting, where she's touting data. And again, this is going to prove the point that if you got somebody like Nancy Pelosi touting this as a so-called Speaker of the House, it might lead people to be just a little bit confused about it. This is what Dana Bash. See if we can get this thing on here.
But the President of the United States is signaling that he could open it up. What is your opinion on that?
My opinion is that it is not scientific based. He's notion mongering as he does almost every day. So rather than waste any time on commenting on the president, I would rather spend our time focusing on the fact that any president or anybody with responsibility should be scientifically inclined, evidence-based data. What is going to make the difference? I think the cure is the biggest message of hope that is...
There's your data comment from her,
24/7.
Which is exactly what you're saying about a technocrat.
Well, it is, and all these the technocrats that are advising people like Pelosi and Trump, for that matter, they're all presenting a case where they have the truth of the matter, and everybody else doesn't and can't possibly understand it because they don't have the data. Once the data has been made a mystery to everybody else,
right,
there's no accountability looking at the data. You can't look at the data and say, well, I disagree with that. Once this whole data card is played, you can't argue back. You say, well, what data are you looking at? Well, we're not going to show you. Well, it was
then
a
you
survey,
got the,
you know.
Yeah,
okay. There's not going to tell you what's behind it.
Yeah, what's behind the curtain?
That's right. You can't possibly get to the root of what they're talking about. And this is the whole fallacy of this, what I call, not what I call it, but it's called scientism.
Right.
Where science is held up as a god that's more or less infallible. And this god of science is the only source of truth discoverable in the universe. That rules out all religion. It rules out all logic, all philosophy, etc. All that's gone. Only science can determine what truth is. This is wrong. This is fundamentally a wrong idea. And yet, people like Pelosi are being coached along these lines that, hey, you know, we've got the data, Nancy. The data shows blah, blah, blah. Therefore, the citizens need to do blah, 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 blah.
That's right.
And she buys it.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter what the blahs are. You know, it just like
it doesn't matter what the blahs are.
Anything you want to do, anything you want to make them do, you know, you can. Look, over in Italy, I think at a couple, I heard this in Spain too, at 8 o'clock at night, everybody claps. They clap. I mean, literally, they lean out their windows and they clap as a community. They clap for the police. They clap for the first responders. They clap for the nurses and doctors, whatever. It's like, well, I guess that's one way to express yourself. But they've bought the whole propaganda, you know, thing that they're loving their servitude. Like, you know, this is like Brave New World type situation. They love their servitude, and they're applauding the people that have put them in solitary confinement.
It's amazing. They think they're being kept safe. And, you know, this is the, they've got a whole world that they've done this with. The whole world is taking the knees of these people, which I find absolutely amazing. And that's why I find we have to push back and say, this is not going to happen the way, this is not supposed to happen this way in our country. Because, you know, the moment we, and again, we're telling everybody, the moment you give up your rights, your God-given rights, you've given them up. You have given them up. That's something you have to decide whether or not you're going to do. And I think that's one of the big things that's rubbing everybody wrong right now in the United States. That's where the resistance is in our Constitution and our constitutional rights and what the mindset of the American people is. I think that's really all you have right now, don't you?
Well, it is. And, you know, there is a place for science, in my opinion. And science should advise the political process. There's no doubt about it. We need people that understand some of these things to advise our leaders. But these people are not to be the government leaders.
Right.
They should advise them. And then they should make the decisions for us as a people. And right now, because these scientists have taken over the whole narrative, we're losing all of our constitutional freedoms, all of our Bill of Rights, not just one, but all, every single one of them is being crushed right now. And people are going to wake up on the other side of this, Paul, and they're going to say, what happened to our Constitution? It's gone.
Yeah,
and they're going to wonder freedom of religion, for instance. They're going to wonder about free speech. They're going to wonder about freedom of the press. They're going to wonder about the right to assemble together peaceably. They're going to wonder about their right to redress the government for grievances. All of those are gone. And they're getting crushed. They're getting ground into dust, just like a, you know, like the old time, well, I guess they still do it now, but, you know, pharmacists grind the little pills or whatever into dust in a crucible.
Right.
That's our Constitution.
Pestle and mortar.
Yep.
That seems to be the route that they're trying to take us. And again, what I find interesting is the pushback that's going on now by Trump, even, which it should, it there should be no question about the pushback here. It should be happening. And again, the reason is, you know, I'm a biologist and I understand virology and I understand how diseases move. But there's no, again, there's no statistics that support this whole worldwide shutdown based upon the coronavirus. It just doesn't. The dog's not hunting here at all. I'm sure you recognize that as well.
You have to consider the source here. The same people that said that they were going to destroy the economic system that we have known historically as capitalism and free enterprise, the very same people are the ones that control the World Health Organization, the WHO.
Yeah.
That's the United Nations. And why on earth would they not be working in concert with each other? Well, of course they do. They're not divided against each other. They're working in cahoots. They're the same organization. So you can't just say there's a moral hazard here. It's way beyond that at this point. These people are orchestrating a global panic in order to scuttle capitalism and free enterprise. And I don't care what Trump does at this point. It doesn't hardly matter anymore because it's a global problem. Every nation on earth right now is in complete and utter economic chaos. Here's a headline just this morning, just came up. I knew this was coming. It's a headline, negative interest rates come to the United States. 1 month and 3 month treasury bills are now below zero interest rate. Whoever would have thunk that, Paul? Below zero. In other words, you have to pay them to keep your money safe. The economic system has received a mortal wound. And it's never going to be the same again. It's just, there's no way. Even if it recovers. And you know what? Just to back up just for a second. All of the stimulus money that's going to be thrown out around the world, you know, there's going to be trillions of dollars being whipped around. The Green New Deal people are stepping into the vacuum. I predicted this, by the way, so just when this thing first happened, say, you watch for these people, these greenies, to show up promoting investment in Green New Deal stuff. That's exactly what's happened. And that's where the money so far, that's where a lot of the money is going to go, promoting the Green New Deal stuff and sustainable development. There has never been another economic system offered as an alternative. There's never been any other modification to our current system as a way to fix it. It has always been, with the United Nations, it has always been sustainable development or nothing. And they have it. They're the ones in control of the narrative right now. Sustainable development is going to come on like a storm. And it's probably going to be in the name of either green economy or the Green New Deal, green jobs, green everything.
Resolution.
Have you heard Nancy Pelosi at the United Nations, or excuse me, in the House when she introduces House Concurrent Resolution 353? For this is back in 1992.
Absolutely, I heard it.
I'm going to play it real quick for the audience because. This is something that's pretty important. House Con Resolution 353, 1992. They say in 93 on this. I think they published it in 93. But here you go. Earth Summit Agenda 21.
I now yield to the gentlewoman from California.
Elliot Engel.
Ms. Pelosi.
Elliot Engel. Her still to this day sidekick.
The gentlewoman from California is recognized.
I thank the gentleman for yielding. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I thank the gentleman for yielding. In fact, it is a very simple resolution, which the gentleman has just mostly explained. I would, Mr. Speaker, like to take a moment to thank Chairman Fassell and Mr. Broomfield, Mr. Yatron and Mr. B. Ryder, the chair and ranking member of the subcommittee, and the members of the Foreign Affairs Committee for their assistance in expediting consideration of this legislation. The Earth Summit Environmental Leadership Act, as this is known, presents us with an opportunity to follow up on the important work of the Earth Summit to develop its blueprint, Agenda 21, for global environmental action. HCON Res 353 outlines a comprehensive national strategy for sustainable development in accordance with the principles of Agenda 21 to be coordinated under the leadership of a specific office and at the direction of a high-level government official. The resolution also urges the United States to identify and initiate further agreements to protect the global environment and to support the creation of a high-level United Nations Sustainable Development Commission headed by an Undersecretary General. Third and lastly, the President is urged to report to Congress on the progress made on the with this action. HCON Res 353 is supported by the administration. I have been in contact with the appropriate offices of the State Department and have incorporated their suggestions into the resolution. The 71 co-sponsors in this, of this measure include one half the members of the Foreign Affairs Committee and all of the House delegates to the Earth Summit. It is also supported by the major United States non-governmental organizations concerned with the environmental issues. The Earth Summit presented world leaders with an opportunity that should not be lost. We must now embark on a new course that will sustain our planet and its resources for the benefit of future generations. This resolution calls on the United States to assert its leadership to achieve this goal. I urge my colleagues to support this resolution. Thanks again to the members of the Foreign Affairs Committee for their recognition of the importance and timeliness of this resolution. We must make the promise of Rio a reality.
So, Patrick, this is I think you're right. I think this is the apex moment for them to flip the economies into a resource-driven economy. That's I really agree with you. To get out of capitalism, destroy capitalism. It's not the virus we need to worry about. It's this sustainability issue.
It is. And, you know, in the meantime, people like Pelosi at the very top of the pile are concerning enough. But this has also driven out every two-bit, ten-horn dictator on a local basis as well. And I'm talking about mayors. I'm talking about,
right,
you know, county commissioners and everything, you know. There's people all over America, indeed really around the world, who are following suit with this, crushing the Constitution, crushing the economic system, and dictating to people what they should and should not do. It's like, who would have known that there were so many would-be dictators hiding behind, you know, a suit and a tie?
Well, I think the Founding Fathers knew it. I think the Founding Fathers knew it for sure. And, you know, we're seeing, like, it's interesting that New California is really the resistance right now. And, you know, one of the things that in our study of the New California movement or, forming a new state is Article 4, Section 3 of the Constitution, which says that, and this is very interesting, their wording, and, of course, there's history behind the wording. I'm going to say it to you, but... if you want to form a state from a pre-existing state or states, then you have to get the permission of the legislature or legislatures concerned. And that's a key term because it doesn't say that you get the permission of the governor or of the judiciary or of anybody else in local governance. And this is a key thing. And the reason that the Founding Fathers did that is they want you to work with your representatives, the people most closely associated to the people, your representatives, and not the executive, not the judiciary, and not governmental organizations or other entities, because you see, they are the problem. They're the problem that's causing you to form a new state. And that's the would-be dictator that it's around every corner that you see right now in every state or in every county, every city. that people are using the regionalism models and things like that to be actual dictators in their own communities on a regional basis. That's just a little bit of what the Founding Fathers knew at the time back in 1776, 1789, that era.
Yes, and I think now people are more easily able to see what we've been talking about at a national level for a long time. They can see it in their own local level as well now. Maybe this will get their attention. Maybe they'll start to wake up and say, wait a minute, where do you get this idea? How many counties and how many cities in America now have suspended gun and ammunition sales?
Yeah.
There's a bunch. I don't know how many. I haven't counted. But there's a ton of them.
Well, and therein begs the question that the president's talking about. And it could, you know, again, you can see why they want this president out. And everything he's doing stopped. Because, you know, he is stopping through free market capitalism, the rise of course, the stock market. He has been single-handedly crushing this entire movement of theirs.
He's made it very difficult for them, but they're marching on nonetheless.
Right.
You know, I look at it and shake my, I don't know what to think anymore. I just pretty much abandon national politics altogether anymore. I said for a long time that the battle is local, and I still think that way. I really do. I think the only line of defense that we the people have any control over is what happens in our cities and our counties. And that's about it. Anything above us right now is suspect just by definition.
Well,
and
that's
we're
the
only ones.
Again,
put up the line.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I say we're the only ones that can put up a line of defense. It's individual citizens and individual communities across America that need to stand up and be counted. And you know, whatever Washington does is what Washington does. I've concluded some time ago, you cannot tell these people what to do. They simply will not listen. And even when good people get sent to Washington, somehow they fall into the cloud, and all of a sudden, they get compromised. Maybe the system's just too big for any one person to overcome. I don't know.
Well,
but
you know,
at this point, Americans need to stand up and be counted right where they are.
Yeah, this is where you stand your ground. This is where you stand your ground, and you know this is the reason the Founding Fathers wanted the people to work with the legislature. And the last time this happened, by the way, the last time that this movement of forming a state from a pre-existing state, it's only been done three other times. And if you talk to West Virginians, they'll tell you it's only been done once properly, and that was by them. But it's only been done three other times. We are the fourth time to do this. The last time it happened, it was in 1861, and there was a civil war going on. And that was with West Virginia. So we are following the model, the template laid down by the West Virginians to form a new state. That's how critical this is. And again, our movement is people-based. It's local people-based, which is exactly what you're saying. It's got to be us exactly. Local people working in counties that have to make this big difference right now. We have to make the difference right now. If we don't, we won't have a country. We won't have a world. That's why this movement of New California is really the only organized effort, besides from the federal government, at the local level, that's working to stop these totalitarians.
Yes, I would agree with you. You know, my friend and director of training, Mary Baker, author of Citizen Ninja Stand Up to Power, she says, very presently, she says, if you don't have a seat at the table, you are what's on the menu. That's all you need to know. That's it.
That's it. You're what's on the menu.
That's right.
That's right. It's a binary thing here. You either have a table or yours being served up as the next course.
That's just a great statement. It's true. Absolutely, it's true.
Absolutely true. We know it. We might not have said this maybe 10 or 15 years ago, but today, this is not only obvious, it's absolutely 100% true. People need to quit complaining about other people taking a bite out of them. And the only way to stop it is to get a seat at the table. Mm-hmm. You have to do it. And this means people can't be lazy anymore, et cetera. You need to get up off the couch, whatever. Well, you know, it's pretty convenient that we have a health crisis where everybody has to be home and they have to distance socially. They can't meet. They can't talk to each other. The First Amendment has effectively been suspended in the United States right now because of this coronavirus. You cannot assemble. Even churches are being are being battered down. Freedom of religion, because the state now is telling you how to conduct church. You can only conduct church online. You can't meet anymore. You can only do online church. Well, I'm sorry. That's a violation of the First Amendment. So we can't assemble. We're getting censored to death in social media and, of course, in the mainstream media. And the government ain't listening to anything we're saying whatsoever. So there's no redress of our grievances. That is the entirety of the First Amendment. It's just being crushed. And nobody seems to be concerned. Well, you and I are concerned. But many people are not at all concerned that this is happening. They think somehow it's going to return to normal after it's all done. I've never seen a case in history yet where the government voluntarily gave up power that it grabbed during any emergency. Have you?
No. Absolutely not.
I wish somebody would call in right now and tell us something where the government said, you know what? We had to get power for X, Y, and Z, whatever, but we're going to let that go. We're going to put the law back to where it was, and we're not going to do that anymore. It never, ever happens that way, folks.
No, you know, it's kind of interesting the way this whole thing plays out when you start to take a look at it. And, you know, I guess, Patrick, that if we don't continue, if we don't at least resist it openly now, we're going to give it up. And this has been my big concern. And I keep trying to tell people, you know, you better watch out for what you're wishing for here, or you're not. You know, you're just being nice, compliant people, because if you do, then what's going to happen, obviously, is that you're going to lose those civil rights, which it looks like, you know, we're losing those civil rights right now as we speak. And just because of the fact you can see the roads are deserted, there's no people going out to restaurants, you know, things of that nature. Restaurants have closed. I think restaurants need to reopen, quite frankly. I think it's time that they do that. Just ignore these laws, these heating things, because what is very, very clear to me is that the totalitarians are trying to take away our rights right now. The battle is on, and we're just willy-nilly going along with it. And you know, if people wanted to call in right now, you can call in at 215-867-8255. Let's see if we can get a caller to call in, Patrick, and maybe ask you a question about this, because I'm just going to throw it out there. I know our listener, I've been getting text messages, so I think people might want to ask you a question. We need to have you come out to speak to us out here, Patrick, at some point in time, get you back. This is your hometown I'm in. I'm sitting in your hometown, by the way.
Yes, I confess, I abandoned it a few years ago.
Yes, you did. Which I think is hysterical. You know, you've got roots here in Northern California, and dealing not too far from technocrats that were quite significant in our history, even today, like Jerry Brown. You actually grew up around Jerry Brown, didn't you?
I grew up around the Brown family in general, and that was up in Calusa, California, where they had a house on the other end of the block from where my grandmother's house was. That was just down the street, and it was, you know, yep, they were there. The Brown kids were constantly getting into some kind of trouble or another, and, you know, back then it was like Mayberry RFD. Nobody ever got arrested for anything, but the cops would show up at their house and say, well, you know, one of your kids did something down the street, and you need to stop that. You know, you can't do that anymore. And it was kind of so aggravating, I guess. My grandma wouldn't let me play with the Brown kids because she said nothing ever good came out of the Brown family anyway. So
don't,
she wouldn't let me play with them.
Well, one of our listeners has just texted me and says, Governor Sisolak proves he's a technocrat. The Nevada governor bans malarial drugs for coronavirus patients, according to the Washington Times.
Yeah, it's absolutely ridiculous. You got, you know, people are just tripping over each other to become dictatorial.
Yeah.
And it's kind of human nature in a way, I understand. When the emergency takes place, you know, people want to do something. They want to fix it right away. Instead of stepping back and thinking about it a bit, they just want to knee-jerk and, you know, just do something. Got to do something. Got to show the people we're doing.
Yeah, we got a caller here. Robert, you have a question for Patrick Wood?
Yes, Paul, I do. Patrick, good to meet you. Yesterday, Governor Sisolak of Nevada declared that no anti-malarial drugs would be used in the state of Nevada to fight the coronavirus. That clearly is a technocratic response. How do you recommend we individuals fight that without getting the coronavirus?
Did you hear that, Patrick?
Is the question, how can you fight it?
Yeah, how can you fight that if the governor outlaws it?
Well, you know, this is the problem right now in America, because you cannot assemble anymore to protest anything anybody does. If you don't like it, you have to protest it from home and shake your fist at your TV. This is a problem. You know, the governor, the first governor that really got in hot water in my mind was Governor Inslee up in Washington State, when he first said that any group, any gathering over 250 people would be met with criminal prosecution and criminal fines. I thought, well, that's absolutely patently unconstitutional. You can suggest maybe that people shouldn't meet, but you can't put criminal prosecution on top of it to say, I mean, okay, let's say 251 people get together. Does the last person get arrested, or does a whole lot of them get arrested and put in jail? This is just beyond the pale. But you could not go to the State House in Washington en masse and protest and say, you stop that, or we're going to demand you leave office right now. We're going to come in and, you know, whatever, drag you out. You're out of here. You can't do that. That's one sign that a dictator loves to see, when the people cannot protest the decisions that are made that are clearly dictatorial. This is something that's happened in Nevada right now, but it's happening everywhere. Not just there, everywhere.
Does that help you, Robert?
Yeah, it does. And I think that we'll have a Zoom meeting probably later today or in the next couple of days to the new Nevada people to talk about that.
Yep, I think it's time that people get out en masse, basically, and ignore the dictates of these people. Start getting closer to one another. You know, I tell people, thank you, Robert, for the call. I tell people that, you know, I've had a number of diseases and maladies over my life, and in the viral variety, of course, I've had the flu, I've had the mumps, I've had the chicken pox, I've had measles, and then, you know, I had stage 4 cancer, but, you know, I forgot to mention that I had adult chicken pox at age 36, I had mumps and had orchitis at age 26, I've had pneumonia, I've had many bouts of bronchitis. And, you know, at every turn, I never lost my constitutional rights. I never gave them up. And right now, you got this coronavirus thing running around. I'm not giving up my constitutional rights at all. In fact, I'm going to go out and exercise my constitutional rights all day long, all day strong. And I think everybody else needs to get out and do that in mass. Get out and ignore these unconstitutional warnings that have, by the way, it's not just that they're unconstitutional. See, to me, in my own mindset, they don't have the science behind, they don't have the data to prove to me, and I do get data. They don't have any kind of data that proves to me that there's any danger from this virus that's, in fact, it seems that there's less danger from this virus than the common flus that we've had already go through the United States of America, Patrick.
Well, you know, I've kind of given up on the argument, or at least on the discussion of the science behind this. But and I'll tell you why. Society as a whole, global population, has had all kinds of diseases over the millennia that have given it problems. And isn't it amazing somehow that society has survived, and here we are today?
Yeah.
And we have a system of things, and we have governments around the world. We have nation states, and yes, there's populations that are under different types of governance situations. But somehow the human race has made it through all those different problems without the help of technocrats, without the help of mainstream media. And without the help of people like the Anthony Faucis of the world, and things have got, you know, things just move on. Okay, people die. I don't like to see people die. I don't want anybody to die. I don't think you do either. You know, I hate, you know, when somebody's parent dies or a child dies. I mean, it's a horrible thing. A brother or sister, it's not a good thing. But this is life we're living here, folks. Death is a normal part of life. And death happens. You just simply cannot stop all human activity because any kind of death is staring you in the face. And that's what they're telling us. That's what the World Panic Organization right now is telling us, is that, oh, my gosh, you need to run from death. The only thing you can do is go home and retreat into your room. And you should go in your hide in your bathtub just like you do during a tornado. You know, don't come out until we tell you to.
So we now created a new bureaucracy, the World Panic Organization.
That's right. There I think is. That's good. You should patent that one.
Well, no, you said it first. The World Panic. You said it. It came from you first. You said the World Panic Organization. I love it.
I know. I like the WPO.
Right. The WPO, the World Panic Organization. So anyway, we're going to put this up on YouTube, this hour of conversation with you, and tell us how we can get a hold of your books, Patrick, because this is a really important thing. You also have a website, so tell us about that.
Well, I do. You know, technocracy.news is a place everybody should go and just stay plugged into if you want to see what's going on from what they're writing about, not what I just write about. Getting books right now is not easy, but, you know, you can put an order in either on my website, technocracy.news, or on amazon.com. But I'll tell you right now, deliveries are delayed everywhere you look.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's nothing anybody can do about it right now because, you know, I don't have paper and a printing press to print my own books here in my office, so... But I'll tell you, people that have the book that haven't read it, you know, when they bought it, just put it on the shelf. I say now, would you believe me? Would you just go get the book, get it off your shelf, and read the dumb thing? How about then giving it to a neighbor or somebody else who needs to read it and say, look, I know I underlined this book all over the place, but read this book and find out what's going on in the world here.
Yeah.
I connect dots. This is years ago. I connected all the dots that we're looking at today that are playing out, and technocracy is making its move. It's making its move.
Well, you know, I'm getting a couple of things that are going on now. That, you know, Nancy Pelosi, you know, came up from California and introduced legislation that she wanted to be part of this bill that ballot harvesting and mail-in balloting would be the norm nationally. And of course, here in California, Governor Newsom just last night or yesterday, I think, signed into law an executive order that mail-in balloting will be the way. They're eliminating the whole electoral system as well. Anyway, Patrick, listen, we got to run for time. I want to thank you very much. We'll definitely going to have you on. And, yeah, we'll be putting this up on YouTube so everybody can, everybody in that genre can hear it, too. Great job. And I think that people in high places like the president need to hear your words at this time because we can stop the dictators. Thanks a lot, Patrick.
You bet. Thank you, Paul.
Awesome. Well, anyway, thanks for listening to Agenda 21 Radio. Remember to visit our website, a21r.com or agenda21radio.news. And also newcaliforniastate.com and NCS51 for all the information about New California. Stay strong, America. We are exceptional Americans.
We're sending out an SOS to the last vestiges of freedom, democracy, and the American way of life. Paul Preston with Agenda 21.
Stay tuned for more of Paul Preston's Agenda 21 Radio.
This is AENN, American Exceptionalism News Network.